State lawmakers are looking to expand the hours children can work in Ohio. What do Ohio teenagers think about that? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me in this recorded interview to talk about the potential changes and offer a teen's perspective are Director of Child Labor Advocacy for the Child Labor Coalition, Reed Mackey, and high school senior and winner of the New York Times Student Open Letter Contest, Michelle Huang. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Reed, there have been proposals for several years in Ohio to extend the hours minors can work. Can you explain what that would do?
I think one of the proposals being considered now would allow children to work later in the evening till 9 p.m. And, we're worried about that just because when kids work too many hours during high school, their grades drop and their school completion drops. And we definitely don't want to see that. We want to see kids, teenagers being able to focus on their education and, the lifelong advantages of graduating high school and going on to college.
Reed, what are the current child labor laws in Ohio? And do you have a sense for how they compare to other states?
Well, I think that in Ohio, they're following the federal standard currently, which is that on a school night that kids can work till 7 p.m. and they're supposed to work no more than 18 hours during a school week, which is a standard that we support. We think that that's probably the maximum amount of hours that a teenager should work if they want to succeed and do well in school.
Michelle, you are an incoming high school senior. You wrote a letter to the Ohio State Senators that was published in June in the New York Times. Why did you want to write this letter to Ohio Senators, and what was your message you were working to convey?
Yeah, so personally, I actually have never worked a job. So I think there's people were asking me, like, hey, like, why is this topic so interesting to you all of a sudden? And I actually began interning for Representative McNally in December. And one of the bills that she worked on was Ohio House Bill 150, which I had the privilege of naming the Clock Out Kids Act. And that bill was meant to combat, as you mentioned, the recent pieces of legislation that have been trying to kind of curtail the restrictions of like hours and the ability for kids to work in very manual labor jobs. And that kind of introduced me to the topic. But on a personal note, I have a lot of friends who have worked multiple part-time jobs. My best friend has worked 5 jobs throughout her high school, time in high school, and 3 of those she worked simultaneously. And I saw firsthand how late she was working and how she would text me and she'd be like, hey, I just started my homework and it's like 12 a.m. and I just got back from my shift. And it was really affecting her ability to perform in school and, like as Reed said, and her ability to learn. So I think that aspect really angered me. And also just like paying attention to what's happening right now. I think I mentioned in my letter that there's like a 31% rise in child labor violations in Ohio. So I think just getting that legislative aspect of it was really interesting, but I also can relate on a personal note, seeing my peers struggle because of the vast pressure they have to work late hours.
You know, Michelle, you mentioned that you have not worked one of these jobs like in a restaurant or store or something like that, but so how busy are you day to day? I mean, being a high school student, especially a junior or a senior, can be a super busy time. Do you feel like you would even have time to work a job?
No, and I tried to work a job, I remember, my sophomore year, and it was just literally just on the weekends. I was, like, teaching little kids martial arts at my local Chinese school, and it was just so hard to balance that. And, like, from, like, studying for tests or, like, the ACT/SAT, handling assignments, being involved in clubs and extracurriculars, it was just, like, impossible for me to balance. Like, I had to make a curriculum for those kids. I had to, I don't know, be there for many hours, and I just cannot imagine like the scope of what these other kids are doing, like working till 10, like very late night shifts and having to juggle their academic responsibilities at the same time. So it is just unimaginable to me.
Senate Bill 50 wants to extend these hours for young people, for minors, and supporters of that legislation and other bills like it that have come in the past, they argue lots of young people want to work. They can learn important skills in jobs like this. They can save money for college. What do you think about those kinds of arguments?
You know, we do agree that work can provide some learning experiences and, you know, provide help teens learn valuable skills, but it should be done in a way that it protects the teenager from educational damage. That's done by restricting the number of hours. You know, we think below below 20 hours a week during the school week is really important. We don't really want to see teens working more than 40 hours and, you know, in the summers. But there's also, there's been a very significant expansion of hazardous child labor in the last few years. And we definitely don't want to see that. We don't want to see kids put in danger. Some of the more concerning situations in Ohio involve kids working in cleaning crews and meatpacking. You know, that's just not an environment that kids should be in. It's, you know, the work is illegal. We're seeing kids in factories around the country, in meat processing plants. In 2023, the Department of Labor found 13 facilities in 8 states where kids were working, and they were often working the overnight shift, and they were using caustic chemicals. So it's, you know, it's both dangerous and damaging to their education. There are many reasons why these jobs are not good jobs for children.
We're talking in this recorded interview about proposed changes to Ohio's child labor laws and getting a teenager's perspective. Well, Michelle, I'll tell you, full disclosure, when I was a teenager, which was a very long time ago, my mom's perspective was that school was my job. She wanted me to focus on school and studies and not work outside of school, do extracurriculars, that kind of thing. Do you think, you mentioned that you had this internship with a state representative. Is that the kind of thing that more teenagers are choosing to do? Do you think, like, are there alternatives that teenagers like yourself are choosing instead of jobs at, you know, a fast food place or ice cream parlor or something like that?
Yeah, I think personally, I go to a very academically competitive high school, and a lot of the people who are very like academically oriented kind of prefer internships over full-time jobs or part-time jobs because most of them are unpaid, which is kind of ironic coming from my end, but there's not really a fixed time. Usually it's just like 2 to 3 months. It's very temporary. And you kind of have more say in your hours because you're not getting paid, and it's more of a volunteer kind of thing. So yeah, I think, a lot of kids are now preferring to work those kind of, to get that kind of a professional experience, because I think we have more control over what we can do and what we can learn.
Mm. Michelle, do you hear from friends who think that kind of being able to work a paid job as a teenager is important? I guess, do you think, you mentioned your best friend was working a whole lot of jobs. That sounds like way too much maybe, but do you have other friends who are working jobs either during the school year or in the summer and really like it for different reasons?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot of people from my school. I come from a pretty affluent area, a suburb from Columbus, where like a lot of people, I think my friend is kind of an exception. They're just working to get some extra money, working with their friends. Like some of their friends are on like their crew. And yeah, it can be a very like leisurely, like fun activity to do after school where you're kind of getting money in the process. But yeah, in that regard, like it can definitely be like not exploited.
Well, you mentioned exploitation. I mean, Reed, is that one of the concerns about legislation that would expand hours, that young people could be exploited if there are longer hours they can work during the school year or summers?
That's a concern. And, you know, I think Michelle really, really hit on that in her letter. The kids are, you know, they're at risk of just, you know, doing too much. Employers are looking for docile workers. They're looking for workers that can pay less. So there can be an element of exploitation in this. So I think we just need to make sure that, you know, kids are being paid an adequate wage and they're not working too many hours and not exposed to dangerous work.
Well, and Reed, you mentioned an important thing there, and that's the wage, because companies can legally pay children, teenagers, a lower wage than adults, can't they?
Yeah. Yes. In many states, there's a subminimum wage for teen workers. And I think in some cases, the teens are doing the same work that an adults would do. And so that, you know, you wonder about the ethics of that lower wage.
What does that mean for adult workers who rely on those jobs to support themselves or families and, you know, have to be paid more? I mean, does that end up being kind of competition with the young laborers? Or are they maybe being passed up for jobs or paid less even as a result of all that?
Yeah, you know, we do worry about that, especially globally. There's well over 100 million unemployed adults in the world, and then there are currently, the estimate is 138 million children working globally. So, you know, just like in general, we feel like it'd be better to have adults filling jobs and teens focusing on school. But, you know, given that some teens do want to work, and, you know, we don't want to restrict them from having no work opportunities. Generally, we would prefer to see adults, especially if the work has an element of danger to it.
We'll continue our conversation after a short break, and later in the program, the history of jazz in Cincinnati. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our recorded conversation about proposed changes to Ohio's child labor laws and getting a teenager's perspective. My guests are Director of Child Labor Advocacy for the Child Labor Coalition, Reed Mackey, and high school senior and winner of the New York Times Student Open Letter Contest, Michelle Huang. Michelle, you know, Reed and I were just talking about this possibility for exploitation. Is that one of your concerns too, that these longer hours can, you know, lead to bad stuff for the teenagers who are working them?
Yeah, and I've definitely seen it happen where I'll use my friend as an example, but she kind of comes in like very tired every single day because she's working and trying to do her homework after she works, which is like kind of like early in the morning. It's just very hard for people to balance the pressure of being a teen and trying to perform academically with like trying to get money and that like necessity. I think it's definitely like almost impossible to balance the two.
Michelle, I know your internship was part-time and you know, you were not working 40 hours a week for that state lawmaker for sure, but can you explain what House Bill 150, the Clock Out Kids Act, is designed to do? It sounds like it's maybe designed to almost stand up against this Senate Bill 50 that we've been talking about.
Yeah, so House Bill 150, I think it's what we call in the office a messaging bill. Obviously, with like the Republican majority and with, you know, the Speaker being in charge of assigning like the hearings and the like all the committee operations, it's probably going to be very hard to pass. But it's kind of just like a statement to, you know, kids and to like parents all over the state that like we won't tolerate what the Republicans on the other side of the aisle are trying to do. So kind of in essence, it would strengthen enforcement against companies that violate child labor laws. And it kind of deepens the penalties to hold these what we call bad actors accountable. And most importantly, it'll establish a child labor fund within the Department of Commerce to kind of make sure that the child labor laws are more enforced. But yeah, I think it's at its core a messaging bill that shows that, you know, like you said, we're trying to stand up to what is happening right now.
Reed, are you seeing that across the country? I mean, my understanding is that there are lots of states where bills like Senate Bill 50 have been introduced to try to expand the hours that teenagers can work, expand the, you know, the hours during the day, the number of hours per week. Are you seeing those around the country? And are you seeing kind of bills in response or in reaction to that by Democrats who are saying, no, we don't want that?
Yeah, we have seen a lot of states in recent years trying to weaken protections. I believe there were 17 states in the last 4 years that have done some sort of rollback on protections. That's a very scary number because, you know, it's really hard to get these protections through. And some of them have been in place for decades. And then to see legislators coming in and weakening protections without really a lot of justification, that's worrisome. There is a conservative think tank in Florida called the Foundation for Government Accountability that has been, you know, basically providing legislative language to states in the hopes of getting them to weaken protections. And you have to ask, like, well, you know, why would they be doing that? Why do they want to weaken protections? Is it because they want to exploit teenage workers more? It's very worrisome. I believe there were at least eight states just this year that have introduced legislation to weaken protections. And you're right, there have been some states where there have been legislation that both would weaken protection and strengthen protection. We've seen that in a few cases. Arkansas, I think a year or two ago, they got rid of their teen work permit process, which we thought was provided some nice safeguards, but then they increased child labor fines. So we are seeing that where they'll extend hours or do something else, and then they'll extend increased fines. But we don't want to see them doing this, weaken things, and then in a way it's what Michelle was talking about, a messaging bill where it gets legislators an ability to say like, oh, well, we're not just, we're doing good things too. And they even each other out. But I think it's often the case that they don't even things out, that one of those bills is worse than the other. Mm. Reed, the other is good.
Yeah. Reed, would you like to see even more protections or actions being taken to really protect young workers? I'm thinking things like anti-harassment training, because it seems like teens can be particularly vulnerable to harassment in the workplace. They might be less likely to report it or know how to report it because, they haven't worked a lot of places.
Yes. Well, we have seen some states that are allowing kids to serve alcohol at a younger age. And, in some of those states, they've decided that they will let that happen, but they'll provide sexual harassment training, and so that your 16-year-old female server won't be sexually harassed, or will be better able to deal with it. But my feeling is, why are we putting teenagers in a situation where they're likely to be sexually harassed? Training is good, especially safety training. But let's not put kids in danger situations. There's also an area that we haven't talked about, where the U.S. child labor laws have really big gaps when it comes to protecting children who work in agriculture. And we see, we think it's about 300,000 children who are the sons and daughters of migrant farm workers who work in the fields, and they're allowed to work really long hours. As long as they're not missing school, they're allowed to work 12-hour days in 100-degree heat, and the work is backbreaking, and it's in violation of international law. But in the U.S. there's a tradition of helping farmers, and we have these huge exemptions that have been allowed to exist all the way back, to the Fair Labor Standards Act in 1938. And we think it's time to close those and to provide some protection to these children working in an industry that, quite frankly, is surprisingly dangerous. The, fatality and injury rates are quite high.
I can add to that,
Sure, no, please do.
I think as we were researching this bill in December before the General Assembly started, I think we were looking at talking points that proponents of the previous version of the bill were using. And many people were talking about how, look, there's this labor shortage in Ohio. We kind of need some kind of labor source to address it. But the industries that suffer the most from the labor shortages are industries that children should not be working in, like healthcare, like transportation, like manufacturing. Those are definitely industries that are reserved for adults and not for the labor of children. So adding on to Reed's point, I think that a lot of facts have been misconstrued on the other side, and it is just dangerous what this is doing.
Reed, there are some families that really count on wages their teenage children can earn and contribute to the family. Do you think that should be a consideration in these policies?
I don't think we can use that as a justification for child labor. I think that legislators need to work harder to make sure that adults make a living wage, and that they don't need to basically in some cases sacrifice their children's youth to provide family income. My heart does go out to families that are struggling financially, and I realize that they have to do what they have to do. But I think that as a nation, our political leaders really need to make sure that kids are not sacrificing their futures, and that adults can make a living wage.
Reid, you mentioned when we early on in our conversation that right now Ohio kind of follows the federal rules, practices, regulations. Would there have to be change at the federal level for this, for Ohio to adopt a law that could expand these hours?
Well, that's an interesting question. And there is a legal principle that when two sets of regulations apply to a teen worker, that the more protective of them carries weight. So legally, if Ohio extends the hours, it should not have legal force. But in reality, what happens is the employers are very confused because they've got two sets of laws, and they start following the state law. And we saw in Iowa, where they passed a pretty bad bill a couple of years ago, that the employers were very confused. The Biden administration Department of Labor started fining employers because they were violating federal law. And they were like, hey, we're following the state law. But they didn't realize that, one had precedence over the other. So it's another reason why we don't want to see the states weakening, weakening in the wrong direction from the federal protections. It creates a lot of confusion for employers. It exposes them to vulnerability of federal fines, and adds chaos to the situation.
Michelle, in this letter you wrote to Ohio senators that was published in the New York Times, you wrote, quote, "We the children aren't the answer to adult problems," end quote. Can you say a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Yeah, I think, like I was saying earlier, the industries that are suffering the most are industries that are meant for adults to work in and not children. So in that regard, I don't think children should be taking over adult jobs, but like more broadly, I think like Reid was saying earlier, like I think the main message that this bill is saying is that we want more docile workers, we want to cut corners. And I think that's just like, that's just so discouraging to see as a child, like as a teenager right now, being able to have a voice, especially because I can't vote, and also just not being considered as like a serious advocate. So I think obviously there's like the workforce aspect, but also just the fact that we are being stifled politically and that we are being like touted as a solution to a problem that is not of our doing. Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been talking with Director of Child Labor Advocacy for the Child Labor Coalition, Reid Mackey, and high school senior and winner of the New York Times Student Open Letter Contest, Michelle Huang. Thank you both so much for your time today and for this important conversation.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Up next, the history of jazz in Cincinnati. This is Cincinnati Edition.